As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I said, mobile phone going off in my pocket.
It happens. Yeah, in television, Owen, everyone panics when a phone goes off, but it's not the end of the world.
Okay.
Should we have a competition for the identity of that caller?
It's a funny looking bloke.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of The Ruck, the new rugby podcast from The Times and The Sunday Times. I'm Owen Slott, Chief Rugby Correspondent of The Times, and I am podcast governor for the weekend. Apparently the podcast is flying higher than the Sutton United reserve goalkeeper. And so, appropriately, we have another cast of rugby heavyweights on the show this week. I'm joined today by Stuart Barnes, who writes for both The Times and The Sunday Times, who insists that England must smash Italy by more than 68 points this weekend, or otherwise we should all pack up and go home.
Cruel.
We hope Barnes will fit into the pod team today, despite his lack of broadcasting experience. Morning, Barnesy.
Good morning.
Good to have you on. We are joined also by Damien Hopley. Damien is a former England and Wasps player who retired in 1998, aged 27, forced out by a knee injury. We were still talking earlier about his outside break. Are you impressed that people still remember that, Hoppers?
I very much so. I'll be paying out good money to each of the panellists for bringing that up. Thank you, chaps.
Okay, that's the last nice thing we're going to say about him today, I think. On the quitting as a player, on being forced to quit by a player, Damien surveyed the scene and asked a serious question. Who is it who catches players like me who lose their living early, players who have to find a second profession at such an early age? When he saw nothing, he started what became the Rugby Players Association, which nearly 20 years later plays a massive role in the game and in players' lives. So Damien, welcome to the show. And finally, a man who needs no introduction, but we'll give him one anyway. Steve Jones, rugby correspondent for the Sunday Times. Steve, you were once Rugby Writer of the Year. What are the chances of you returning next week with the same accolade adorning your byline?
Well, I've seen the shortlist and the expression shoo-in comes to mind. Oh, sorry, you're on it as well, aren't you? Well, Sati, I tell you what, it'll be well deserved if you win it, but I'll never enter again.
Good luck, mate, good luck. Now, those who have become regular listeners to this podcast will recognise that we love to discuss the game, we like to have fun with it, we love the Six Nations. But before we start on that, though, we have to recognise a story of far more importance this week than tries and heroics and the Six Nations and Grand Slams and all the rest of that. And we want to start on that this week. Tragic news emerged at the weekend of the death of the former Wallaby lock forward Dan Vickerman. Vickerman was only 37 years old. He had amassed 63 caps and a world of respect. He retired after the 2011 World Cup, and it is then that he clearly started to struggle with the rugby afterlife. What do you do next? How do you replace everything that being a professional sportsman brought to me? Vickerman did not get far enough in finding those answers, it would seem. His mental health suffered. Damien, this is a shocking and terrible story, but the thoughts and feelings that assailed Dan Vickerman's mind are not uncommon, are they?
No, and I think, first of all, the condolences go out to Sarah, his widow, and the two young children in the family, and all those who knew Dan. The accolades that have been pouring in from around the world, the people he played with, is a testament to what an outstanding individual he was, and it's just a huge shock and a great tragedy that he's no longer with us. But I think what this has done, and it was a tragic coincidence that Dan's passing was coincidentally the same time as we launched our Rugby Players Association Lift the Weight campaign. That's all about mental health and mental illness and trying to reach out and ensure that players first and foremost under our watch as RPA members have support around them. But it just highlights the how difficult that transition can be. And, you know, Dan was an extraordinarily bright, capable person, had done a lot of work in this area with his own Players Association back in Australia. So it's an illness and a disease that can affect everyone. And I think that the shock that has gone through the rugby world speaks volumes for who Dan and what Dan was all about.
Steve, you did a very big piece in the Sunday Times this weekend on the RPA campaign and the struggles that players face with mental health. Can you tell us a bit about the players that you spoke to and the stories that they were sharing with you?
Well, first of all, it was the most amazing week's work I've ever had. I should thank Damien publicly because it was he and his team and Tom McDowell at the RPA who not helped me but put me onto it, more than helped me. And also at the end of the week, I was almost ashamed of what I hadn't known before in all aspects. The players that I spoke to, eight of them, were just wonderful. Courageous, wouldn't keep anything back whatsoever. It taught me that just because someone is a fantastic bloke and outgoing and charming and always buzzing from the outside means nothing in terms of, you know, you take someone like Ollie Phillips, who is always buzzing and was on the World 7 scene, etc., etc. Ollie went through real blackness and hell, despite his outer demeanour. That taught me that. Also taught me what that rugby's umbrella of care and love and affection is still there from the campaign from Lift the Weight, and that it, I think horrendously on Sunday, it suddenly almost became more urgent than it was before because of Dan Vickerman.
And these players, I mean, No one is more important than another, but there were Johnny Wilkinson was one of them. James Haskell was another one of them. It, as you were saying, success ain't got much to do with it, has it?
No, it hasn't. And the thing is, Owen, that the people we spoke to and the people that RPA helped me with were everyone had a different story. I mean, you've got James Haskell, who, you know, typical of a Hask with his massive preparation culture. He'd even prepared in the future to feel depressed if he should do, because he's been seeing someone since the age of 19. Take Daniel Waterman, you know, when you see Daniel, she's as bubbly as Ollie Phillips and a great player, but she was going through hell from injury, and others was just tangential, you know. Duncan Bell, the great man, went through a marriage breakup but was always feeling gloomy, and actually it was the rugby that kept him going, etc., kept him sane. So John Okito was just a magnificent bloke from Leicester and Christchurch, who had an awful misunderstanding with his dad, in which they were in separate rooms not talking, but each wanted to talk to the other, and it gave John again 6 or 7 years of hell. So it is so complex, it's so deep, it's so difficult. But I mean, I think that any one person who now reaches out to Lift the Weight is a bonus, and you know, let's just hope everybody comes out.
Stuart, you were played before there was an RPA there, or even a thought of it, I suppose. When you look back, would this sort of thing have been talked about at all? Would you have been aware of players having issues like this, or is that just another era?
No, it's not another era. I mean, players are no different in the sense that it's an emotional intensity. Sport is, and always has been and always will be, it's a branch of entertainment. And when you're involved in the entertainment business, there has to be a degree of the extrovert in you. And you run out and you represent your club or you represent your country, and there's 10,000 there or there's 70,000 there. You're in the spotlight. And, you know, there are times when things can go well, things can go badly, but you'll come off at the other end and just think, I have to be out of there now. And there's a mask, I think, when you're a sportsman. It's a mask that you put in front of the media, the public, and it makes it harder when you have to put this mask all the time. And I think, you know, it's, you know, we look back to cricket, which has long had a problem. And the other aspect is it's a team game as well. It's an entertainment, it's a team game. And when it's a team game, you really don't want to show anything in front of your fellow players. Now, the one difference between when I played and now is they're not just fellow players, they're fellow pros. And so people are prepared to look further, to engage and be a little bit more open-minded. I think Damien will probably agree in the sort of 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, rugby was quite a macho culture. So if you did have problems, you kept them quiet.
But this, the interest for me, particularly with rugby, is as you say, it's a macho culture. So rugby players are almost obliged not to admit when they're hurt. I mean, that's part of what the deal is when you're on the pitch. You've taken a blow, but you get up because you don't want to admit that you're hurt physically and mentally, I think, is, I guess, would be the same, Damien.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, we talk about the hidden illness, and I think what we've got now is professional environments where, you know, players don't necessarily have to get on with each other. They have to work well and play well together. And certainly hearing some of the sort of philosophies that came out from New Zealand over the last two World Cup wins is that teams weren't necessarily the best of friends, but they got on well together. For me, this is just an extension of the well-being and support we give to our players. You know, one of our edicts as a players' association is, you know, we want England to be the best place to play rugby in the world. And off-field support and care through Lift the Weight campaign, through our charity Restart Rugby, through all the personal development programs we run in conjunction with the RFU and Premiership Rugby, means that we want England to be a fantastic playing environment. And this is part of it. And I mean, as Jonesy pointed out, you know, what you don't know, you don't know. But from our perspective, we need to do more in this space. We need to look after our players better. And
do you recall your own process of the transition, as it's known, from player to the outside world?
I think I'm still on it, actually, to be honest, Lottie. It was interesting. I talked a lot about when I had to retire, and I had 8 operations on my knee and 2 knee reconstructions, and effectively got sort of legged over by the RFU at the time, having, despite captaining the England Sevens team in Hong Kong, had to pay my own medical bills, had to fight to get compensation. And that really was the catalyst for setting up the Players Association. But for me, when I was listening to Jono Kisser the other night, listening to Ollie Phillips at the launch we had, the resonance was extraordinary, because it absolutely was what I went through as a 26, 27-year-old. Because you feel like, it sounds quite melodramatic, but you feel like there's a bereavement, and you feel like a part of you has died, because you're no longer the person you said you were. You're not defined, as Stuart said, running out in front of 10,000 or 70,000 people. So you're groping around for this, you know, self-identity. You've lost all this self-esteem and sense of direction. And I think being involved in an environment where it's quite institutional, and these were the early, very early days of professional rugby, so nowhere near where as sophisticated as clubs are now. But when you're having everything done for you, for me, it was absolutely the sense of you don't belong anymore. And you're sitting on a physio's bench and everyone's running around and coming in and giving you stick because you're still not out there 12, 14 months on. So I think that was the hardest thing, is that suddenly just a part of you almost does die, because you're no longer the person you were. And that physically was never going to be a problem, but psychologically was undoubtedly the hardest thing that we went through.
So one of the things that listening to these two former greats here is that what we've got to get rid of is this thing that old school is always good. I think, you know, like Duncan Bell saw himself as old school, and old school, if you're talking about great old characters, is one thing, but when you're talking about the culture of silence, it's very, very, very dangerous, and the stigma, etc. You know, let's remember that there's only one part of the campaign that's restricted to Damien's members. That's the 24/7 helpline. The rest of it, as Damien has said, and his colleagues, is to really get it out there for you know, for all players and their families. I mean, I spoke to Kane Palmer Newport, who's got 3 horrendously challenged close relatives with
schizophrenia.
And the stories were hair-raising from Kane, who spoke brilliantly. And, you know, old school is gone now. And again, it's for everybody. It's for parents, it's for children, it's for retired players, and it's for current players of all shapes and sizes.
Steve, one of the weights that people suffering from mental health bear is the idea that they're on their own and that they can't talk about it, and sharing is the first step, as we know. In your interview with Duncan Bell, you told a story that showed how successful sharing can be, and also how the fact that the rugby community, however you regard it as macho or not macho, is very open to understanding what people go through. Would you just tell that story about when Duncan Bell told his Bath teammates that he'd been what he'd been going through?
I mean, Duncan was all the Bath players were gathered, and Kane Palmer-Newport was there and told me about it. They're all gathered in a room at Farley House, and Duncan was sort of in the corridor, and he'd walk towards the door and stop and then keep on going back again because he wasn't sure he was doing the right thing. And he was in many ways the archetype of old school and let's keep it quiet, and you know, and he was worried the players would think that he'd let them down by speaking, but the experience of all of them I spoke to is, as soon as they started speaking, things got better immediately. I mean, there was a long road to travel. Anyway, so Duncan gave his speech and said, look, I've been suffering from depression for years and hope you don't feel let down. Everybody got up and said, and gave him what Duncan says is a man hug. There was a lot of emotion in the room. They then go out to warm up for their training. And as Duncan, as Belly said, he said, we, as usual, we started off touch rugby, and within about 2 minutes Ollie Barkley shouted, lads, for God's sake, let Belly score, otherwise you might go away and start crying. And Belly said it was the best thing anyone could have said, because the bond was there. He was out, the hair was running, and you couldn't get it back in, but the bond of rugby was still there.
Good. Okay, thank you, gents. Just finish that section by saying the Rugby Players Association campaign is called Lift the Weight. And if you wanted to get in touch, the web address is www.therpa.co.uk/liftTheWeight. Rugby goes on, and we're going to slip back into the game on the pitch now. The Fallow Week in the Six Nations, it sometimes seemed like a quiet one when there's not a lot going on, but the Aviva Premiership at the weekend absolutely roared, I found. I actually missed the first day of it because I was on an Alp, but I got back on Sunday and caught up as far as I could go. I thought it seemed amazing. There was 374 points scored over the six games. That's an average of 62 points a game. Barnsley, do you catch a lot of it?
Yeah, that worries me. Too many points. Points don't tries don't necessarily mean good rugby, but certainly on the Sunday there was a lot of good rugby, and it was great to see the north of England going so well. Sale's performance against Wasps was absolutely outstanding. Some fine performances. And the other thing I would note is, and I think I wrote a column about 3-4 months ago, nobody's mentioning Dean Richards and what a great job he has slowly been doing at Newcastle. He's rebuilt that club. He's taken a team that played absolutely no rugby and he's turned them into a really entertaining team. And when you look at the man-for-man personnel-wise on the field, you're thinking, you know, this isn't a team that looks on paper as it should be challenging for Champions Cup next year, but it is now. And those two performances were really heartening. A couple of years ago, you started to wonder if there was a sort of a split in the Premiership. You know, the big clubs, the money clubs, just getting away from the others.
Yeah, there was a 6-6 or a 5-7, wasn't there?
There certainly was. And Newcastle in particular, this season, are showing that doesn't have to be the case. And that was hugely heartening.
I just thought it was a tremendous weekend. I just love the Newcastle club. They got none of the advantages of some of the other clubs where there's a guaranteed 20,000 there, come through the gate, etc. They've had to fight for everything. And as well as Dean Richards and the team and the players who have been fantastic. There's like Mick Hogan, chief exec, and the owner. It's just a buzz there. And Sale were tremendous as well. There's a great stat from Steve Diamond after the game where he said, just like you know, there were 13 former members of the Sale Academy up there today, five with Wasps and eight with Sale, which is a great recommendation, as well as a Barb comment. So I just think it's been the best Premiership season. I think there's a huge buzz. I'd like the best players to be around more often, but that can't be done unless internationals are cropped. And it was just joyous on the weekend to see different faces playing with such enthusiasm.
I think it was. I had a fantastic weekend, actually. I got on the road. I went to Leicester on Saturday and then shared a train to Sheffield with two hen parties, several drunken football fans.
And then the rugby started and you...
And then I took my Leicester kit off and then went over to Sale on Sunday. So had a really great weekend. And actually, it's interesting looking at the opportunities that the Six Nations gives to some of the younger players who came through. And I just thought some of the rugby weekend was outstanding. I mean, particularly, you know, even as a former Wasp, to see Sale go as well as they did was brilliant. And I just sort of feel that, you know, there's always that big concern of the clash between international and club rugby, and does it detract? In many ways, I think it was a great advert for the Premiership of the weekend that there's so much talent that maybe doesn't get the game time it deserves. But they were in full force at the weekend.
Can I say that this is where the extra money does come into it? Because obviously I spend a lot of time on Sky duties with Pro 12 rugby. And the Premiership at international periods has a real advantage. The strength in depth comes through. I saw a pretty decent game, Ospreys Munster, but they don't have the quality just bubbling up as we're seeing out of Premiership rugby, and the number of English players and academy players coming through. And that's very heartening for England. And it's why England, this weekend, is why England should always be one of the best two or three teams in the world, because of the depth of talent. These are the weekends when you see it.
You mentioned depth of talent and how high Newcastle are flying. I agree with that completely. The talent coming through in Newcastle from the northeast is not hot enough. There's not enough coming through. There was a stat that Dean Ryan was in the paper this morning, who's now in charge of development of under-20s and the player pathway, as it's called. Of the last 100-odd players that have been capped for England, only two have come from the northeast. It's not enough.
Well, I think one of the reasons... examples are key, right? When England won the World Cup, every young kid in England wanted to be a fly half. They didn't know about sidestepping or anything, but they could all drop goals and kick penalties, because Wilkinson was the example above all our examples. Everyone wanted to be Johnny Wilkinson. Now, Newcastle have struggled just to hang on in the Premiership. Steve's made the point they don't get big crowds because it hasn't been easy to get people there. So the examples haven't been there. You know, no 11-year-old kid wants to say, I want to grow up and be someone fighting against relegation every year. What I think will happen if Newcastle...
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Russell can make the breakthrough and relive the great days when they were early champions and be there or thereabouts for a number of years. I think then you've got a chance of people coming through. And that, you know, grassroots, you know, it doesn't just happen. There has, and especially in an age of television and so much sporting competition, you've got to look at someone local and say, I can be like that. And I think Newcastle being successful will break that stat. And it is a worrying stat and it's a problem. But the North East, you know, it isn't a hotbed of rugby union. It's always had rugby excellence. Gosforth were a powerful team in the 70s. But no one would say that Newcastle, you know, has been the generator of English rugby. It needs a successful team, and I think they're getting one.
But it's interesting with Newcastle. I mean, they're bidding for the European Cup finals next year. You know, they're absolutely laying their stall out as a centre of excellence to play rugby union. And you know, it's interesting. We as an organisation will go out and visit clubs throughout the season. And, you know, you can definitely sense a change in the wind up in Newcastle in terms of, you know, the people they've got there. Nicky Gonover going this year. You know, you really feel people like Dave Waldo going on into the media saying, well, you know, seventh isn't good enough. We want to be in the top four. There's a real ambition and steely ambition about them now that we probably haven't seen for a while.
I would love England to take another international back up to St James's Park or even to Old Trafford as they did in the World Cup. I think it's a real shame they're not doing that.
Totally agree. And where I'm sitting, what a no-brainer to take the final to Newcastle, the European final. I mean, why on earth were we at Murrayfield this year? If Scotland had been dominating the closing stages of the tournament for the last 4 years, fine. But why are we at Murrayfield? Yeah. Why doesn't it go somewhere else? And that Newcastle thing is a no-brainer. It would be magnificent to have it there.
Highlights of the weekend. So I got back, caught up with Wasps Sale. I just loved a bit of commentary that was Kirtley Beale to Willie LaRue back to Kirtley Beale to score. You just think that was an exotica of the modern Premiership that 2 years ago, 3 years ago, you wouldn't have thought possible.
Well, I mean, I was there and you know, Sale were very, very good for that win. You know, Denny Solomono was outstanding and is just scoring tries for fun at the moment. But I thought Will Addison was exceptional in the midfield. And, you know, again, I think even back in my day, Wassail was always a fantastic fixture. You had two very attacking philosophies. I think it's similar this year. And it was, you know, the crowd, the environment, the atmosphere was fantastic up at the AJ Bell. So they were very, very impressive. And a lot of young talent coming through that sales side. And you'd hope that would be a sort of turning point for them in the season, which has stuttered so far.
Yeah, it's stuttered because they've got a lot of young players, and young players find it hard to turn performance into results. The people who make results happen are the sort of gnarly old pros, and you just got to get that balance right. And Steve Diamond, the point that Steve was making about the number of academy players have come through, it's a great strength, but before it becomes a strength, it's also a potential weakness. And I think that's what Sale are seeing. We've seen some fantastic rugby from them, but we've seen some very naive rugby. And I think this is a seminal moment for them, because Wasps have been going so well. The amount of confidence that will come out of this performance, I think, will send them off into the last third of the season in really good shape.
I just loved, clearly the one thing was above anything, that was Harry Kane hat trick against against Fulham. I just
can we avoid,
I thought,
football?
The boy was on for, oh, that's not football, mate, that's life.
Producer, we'll be cutting this section out.
Yeah. No, we won't. I'll resign if he does. Oh no, I better not say that, because you might. I just thought fantastic. Also, another great performer I absolutely love was Khan Fotouelli on Saturday. Just magnificent at scrum half for Bath, and the difference between the teams. And on Sunday, I had a great afternoon. I went to see Colts rugby between Reading and Reading Abbey at a time when Colts rugby is difficult, struggling a little bit for numbers. I saw a great full-blooded game, which I really enjoyed.
Denny Solomona, that you mentioned, Hoppers, he scored a hat-trick at the weekend. He's only been playing rugby union for about a week and a half. Is he going to be the next rugby league convert, Kiwi convert, who's going to play for England and then the Lions? Or do we feel that England is strong enough that if you imported a player like that, it might start to weaken the bonds that are already there?
I just very quickly say, I was really depressed when I picked up a number of papers Monday, when the first thing about that game wasn't the quality of the Sale performance. And I understand the hat trick and the guys arrive from Castleford and he's still in contractual disputes. It's a good story. But immediately people were saying, What are his prospects of being qualified for England, and when could he be qualified for England? He's a 24-year-old Kiwi of Samoan extraction. I would like to think people are saying, when is he available for Samoa? I don't think England should be looking at him, and I think it's a terrible indictment of the game that our first impulse is to say, when can we have him? England can't turn around and moan about what's happening in the world game when all the English fans are saying, can we get our hands on him? He's not English. Shouldn't play for England.
Well, I actually agree with you. I think if he was brought into the England setup, I think it would be detrimental to what's there already. But on the other hand, Eddie Jones is a pragmatist.
But it's massively premature as well. I mean, the world does not work. You score 9 tries in 7 games. That does not make you an England international or a Lion. It makes you a player of great potential. But Damien's played this game, like myself, for a long time. You know, that's just not how it is.
Who can recall how long Jason Robinson had been playing for? He was on that plane to the 2001 Lions. Was that about the same time, wasn't it?
That was his. I think it was his opening season. I could be wrong.
Somebody said, I know that somebody said, I'll eat my hat if Jason Robinson plays for England. And I believe it might have been me, but I did actually say in his opening season. But Clive Woodward looked at Robinson and he saw something. And in fact, when he played, he made his debut against Italy. The rest of the England team avoided him. They didn't pass to him. Robinson didn't know what he was doing. It was a premature call from Woodward, but it was a brilliant call from Woodward because he looked to the potential. But Jason Robinson has been doing that at an incredible level. He was a freak at rugby league.
He's also English.
Absolutely freak. And he's English.
Yeah.
So,
I'm just interested what Damien thinks, because obviously you've got members involved in this, Hubbers.
Yeah, well, yeah, it puts us in a really difficult position. Yeah, thank God we don't have to pick the England team. But I think, you know, it's a bit like the Nathan Hughes scenario. If Nathan qualified play for England through residency, and if the rules are there and they apply to a player, then, you know, those are the rules. And we've seen New Zealand warehouse players and actually, I would say, destroy a number of careers over the years by picking a player at the New Zealand A level or into the sevens and therefore capturing their eligibility. Mm. And I think that's the biggest challenge we've got with the enormous quality of Pacific Island players, that actually their international careers get blighted because they'll play for the second tier nation or they'll get picked for New Zealand for one game and then they're captured and caught by that and can't then play for their country. And I think, yeah, there is a real issue around world rugby and qualification periods, but also going back the other way, should there be a stand down period for players to say, actually, I've played for Australia and 2 years later I actually want to return and play for Samoa? I think we'd see what was an extraordinary World Cup in terms of the quality of the rather ridiculously called second tier nations and what they brought to the competition. But if you saw some players going back the other day, you might see some really huge results going on in World Cups, which would be fantastic for the game.
I agree with that. I agree with this a sort of amnesty for it, but until then, when you look at Burgess, Leslie Vinacole, you think, well, sorry, I'm quite sure what they were doing out there in an England shirt, and even though Burgess was English, but it's a very, very touchy thing. I agree with Hoppers. There's a great chance here to seal off some players for the emerging nations or the great nations of the Pacific for a start, and let's take it. I'm slightly wary about Solomona too, Stuart.
Another headline that we had a lot over the weekend was Owen Farrell, Lions captain ? Can that really be feasible? Would he not just be a target if he went out and was the leader of the Lions?
I got to say, I mean, last April I was writing him up as a serial swinging arm, and I just thought he hasn't got the temperament for it. But he's found out how to communicate. He's found out how to keep control of himself. He's got composure. Farrell is a completely different animal in the last 12 months. I would say the outstanding captain for England during the Six Nations is undoubtedly Owen Farrell. When Dylan Hartley has gone off, England have been struggling. Farrell has taken up the reins and in crisis moments has been outstanding. The decision to kick in Cardiff with 9 minutes left, there was no thought. The burden Chris Robshaw didn't seem capable of carrying. Farrell doesn't have that because Farrell backs himself and he believes in himself. And they said in the paper Sunday, Owen, he's got the mentality of a lot forward. He's got the sort of Martin Johnson, follow me, I'll give him what for. But he's also got the subtlety and the skills of a midfield back. And I think it's a very coherent combination. And I've always been a man thinking Maro Itoje will be the next England captain. But one has to reassess in the light of what Farrell is doing. As for the Lions, if he'd been captain of England for 2 years, I would say he would be probably the leading contender because
agree,
I think he's a certain...
It's too early now, sure.
No, that's what I was going to say. I don't think he has the wealth of experience. And having been on a Lions tour, it's not just about who's the best player. It's how do you understand the combination and the mix of the four nations? And when it goes wrong, and it can easily go wrong in New Zealand, you need someone who's got the experience and the respect of everyone. And I still think Alan Wynne-Jones, for me, is that man. And I think it's nothing to do with Owen Farrell's captaincy skills that he's not a contender in my book. It's just a lack of experience.
I agree with everything Stuart said. I think he's
disappointing.
It never happened before. He's some man, Farrell. He's some vastly influential guy. In New Zealand, you get subject to a brutal spotlight. Everyone will bring up all of Owen's past temper tantrums. You know, I remember there's a Lions tour in 68, I think, when the Springboks removed both Lions, Richard Sharp and Barry John, I think, from the fray because they were so targeted. It's ruthless. I would stick with a nice, big, naughty, grizzled forward for now, but I do think Owen Farrell's got a great chance of captaining England in the future.
And to see Owen Farrell down there in that Test series,
yeah,
I was at the first game in Brisbane, and he was astonishing. And for me, he has just come on. I mean, I've always felt he was a world-class player, but I think his followership, his ability on the field, you know, the pass to Elliot Daly in Cardiff under pressure. I mean, this guy is world-class beyond doubt. But, you know, captaincy or not, I think he has a huge part to play in the Lions this summer. And, you know, he just keeps getting better and better. And even as an individual, he has this aura about him, and people talk a lot about Maro and what he brings, but Owen brings this absolute, almost sort of gun shooter presence. He's just on it all the time, you know, and he's a phenomenal professional player.
Saturday starts the third round of the Six Nations. Two absolutely cracking games, the two best games of the weekend. Starts with Scotland, Wales, and then Ireland against France. Scotland have lost Greg Laidlaw and Josh Strauss, and they'd already lost WP Nell. For me, that probably is too much from a team without enough strength and depth.
I think Murrayfield is probably worth 8 points. I think the loss of the people you've mentioned might be worth slightly more. It's a very hard one to call. I felt Scotland in Paris actually dipped down in their performance levels from the game against Ireland. I think that game was overrated. I thought it was a poor match in the last second half in particular. I felt that Wales were the biggest improvers, even though they lost against England. So I think Wales are favourites, but this is a Scotland team that with Hogg can create points from nowhere. And perhaps the most fascinating thing about Scotland, they've lost their inspiration, their tactician, their goal kicker. But you know what? In some ways, Greg Laidlaw has been the bloke who's held Scotland back because he's very much a forward scrum half. He puts a lot of pressure on Finn Russell because he doesn't really snipe. So the decision to go Price or Purgos will be interesting. Can they generate more momentum? But when you look at all the ifs and buts, it's Wales, but it's narrow. I wouldn't have a bet. Even 3 weeks before Cheltenham.
I think that it is very, very tight. I mean, Scotland were wrecked in the scrum against France, and there's this big myth around that Wales have got the same scrummage as France, where they haven't. I think the Welsh front row is incredibly disappointing. Whenever you see Richard Hibbard play for Gloucester, you think, why on earth is he not in the Welsh team? Because he's all over the field. The Welsh props just don't do enough around the field. I think Scotland got a great chance. I've been saying for years it'd be great when the old Murrayfield roar gets back there, and what better time? I think if Wales keep on improving at the rate they did against England, they will be narrow favourites. I just think it's tight, and I think Scotland will have a foothold up front and have got a magnificent chance. And I agree that Ali Price gives Scotland something that possibly Greg did not in terms of the ball in play.
Ireland, France. Later on in the day, I agree with you, Barnsley. I thought Ireland. I thought France. The France game in Paris was disappointing, and it was overhyped, and they didn't appear to continue on the momentum. People have said that the flair is back. I think we saw that a little bit against England. We saw far less against in their second game. Hopperty, how do you call that game?
I just think that the Irish at home will be too strong for France. I mean, I thought France played very, very well against England. They asked all sorts of questions.
Agreed.
They really, you know, I thought they moved the English defence around like no one has done for a long while. And the cohesion seemed to be back. But as you said, against Scotland, I just thought it was a real stop-start game. And at times, even when Fiku scored, you thought, oh, this is actually going to burst the light, and it just didn't. So I think, they've got to have a very strong start. But I do think Ireland, because not only because I've got tickets for the England-Ireland game over in Dublin, but I think that will be the deciding game. And I think Ireland will just be too strong for France.
I think Ireland will beat France comfortably. France's strength is founded on the front row. Ireland's front row is exceptional this season. Mm. Self-belief is so vital in rugby. French teams, international and club level, are getting used to going to Ireland and getting beaten, and beaten quite badly. Irish teams, conversely, are used to playing French teams at home and beating them. Scotland, I think, Ireland got back into that game brilliantly, and they'll be furious that they let it go. But we saw, albeit against a weak Italian team, that they are accurate, they are intelligent, and they are a hard, fast team. I think this is a very good Irish team, and I think they'll beat France well.
I agree.
Finally, we haven't really talked about England. That's kind of refreshing in a way. Does anyone want to attempt a debate about England not winning that one, or should we just go straight for Barnsley's? They have to win by 68, otherwise it's a failure.
I think the interesting thing will be selection and whether Eddie does use this as an opportunity to try players out either in different positions, bring former players back in, mix it up a wee bit and get the finishers on as starters, as a lot of people, including my two esteemed panellists, have talked about over the last few days. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see where he goes with selection and whether that has an impact. But in a way, you know, I do feel for Connor and for Mike Catt and Brennan Venter. I mean, it is an uphill struggle in terms of bringing Italian rugby forward. I think they've got some outstanding players, but I'm not sure the structure really helps them at the moment. And there's a lot of work to be done. Talking to my oppo, Matteo Barbini, from the Italian Players Association, you know, there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes just in terms of the professionalisation of rugby in Italy that are holding them back. So there's still some way to go. So, I mean, it will be a significant England victory.
That's interesting. Does he talk about the psychology of those Italian players? Because for me, it must be such a hard thing to get yourself up every Six Nations, every game, especially once you're in your third cycle of the championship, when you've been beaten heavily twice, especially when you're playing for Zebre or Treviso, when you're not winning many games in the Pro 12 either.
Well, I think that it was the classic sort of back-to-back weekend, having beaten the Springboks, they went and lost to Tonga the week after. And I think that, again, listening to Connor recently on, he was just saying that, you know, the challenge is consistency and actually getting the guys to back up performances.
I would say the South African win has not been franked. It doesn't prove that Italy were able one day to be good and then were poor the next. South Africa, we now know this is the worst South African team we have ever seen leave the shores of South Africa. My grandmother and her mates would have beaten the Springboks this time round, and the Tongan result is probably the reality about where Italy are. And to get back to Eddie Jones and England, Eddie Jones, the whole is always bigger than the individual parts. And that's why whatever he does with tinkering with the odd player here or there, what you got to look at from England is not how X, Y or Z plays, it's how England play collectively. And that's why yesterday, Owen, I talked about how do you measure performance. Eddie Jones measures everything against the template that is New Zealand. Everything. How quickly you get off the floor, everything. He'll look at New Zealand winning 68-10 in Rome and saying that was in Rome, we should be able to beat them by more. And I think England will come alive this weekend, which is bad news for Italy.
Recently, Owen, there's been a growing debate because Georgia have been going well, and then in the last couple of weeks, Germany and Spain have got significant, very significant victories. Russia also improving, and I think from the point of view of Italy, they have to give some sort of performance which will definitively make a, you know, stop this avalanche of publicity that there should be ups and downs in relegation promotion. I think Italy need to show that they deserve to be there. I agree with Damien. There's something in the background there. Maybe the Federation that is completely wrong. And you, when you've got poor old Canner at 10 coming out still looking for his, I think it's second victory of the season of any sort, it's tough. But that debate will grow and grow if Italy start losing games by 60-odd.
Enjoy the weekend, gents. But final predictions. I'm going Wales to win in Murrayfield, Ireland with some conviction at in Dublin, and then England by a very long stretch in Twickenham. Anyone dare to disagree with my clairvoyance?
I've got Scotland to win narrowly against Wales. I also think, if you just allow me, that I think rugby changed this past week, and rugby's got a kick in the backside. A bit more caring, a bit less old school will do wonders for us to look after the players and our whole community.
Agreed. I would like to finish this edition of the podcast just by repeating the that web address for the Rugby Players Association campaign that we talked about before. If anyone does want to get in touch, the campaign is called Lift the Weight, and the web address is www.therpa.co.uk/lifttheweight. Thank you very much for listening.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.